The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
We have the week trending with Larissa Nolan and Ian Power from spunout.ie. And let's start internationally because it could be one of the big events of the year. This could be the political equivalent of Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, the meeting of Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un.
Yes, so after their tete-a-tete on Twitter earlier this year and late last year, so North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has extended an olive branch, it seems, to Donald Trump and said that he would be willing to meet in person in May. And apparently he has also agreed that he is committed to denuclearization and also has pledged that North Korea will refrain from any further nuclear or missile tests. But they've said that before.
Yeah, what is going on here? This is fascinating stuff. But knowing a little bit about this from my own time going out to North Korea 4 years ago, he has been looking to reach out to the Americans, although the first time he tried to do so was via Dennis Rodman, the rather bizarre former basketball player, who, as it happens, is a friend of Donald Trump's, having twice been on Celebrity Apprentice with him.
I see, and I'd say that probably fits in with, you know, Kim Jong-un is probably a big fan of Celebrity. I can imagine him being, you know, really impressed by the sort of glitz and the gaudiness of Celebrity. But the fact of this remains what remains of it is, if it does happen, it'll be one of the most significant developments in the history of Western politics. And Trump will be the man to have done it. I mean, how will the left-wing media in America report that? You know, they'll be eating, sucking bitter lemons over that one.
Yeah, but I've been following this, and something, the first foreign power to endorse Trump's candidacy was North Korea, which followed very quickly after Rodman had been one of the first celebrities to do so. And during the 2016 campaign, Trump actually said he would like to have a burger with Kim Jong-un. And he also said he had to admire how, as a young man, he had taken control of things, which included whacking his uncle.
Well, there's obviously a mutual appreciation society there, you know, two like-minded individuals liking each other. Because one of the things that they said was that the reason why Kim Jong-un had decided to do this was that he was impressed by his fire and fury comment. So what he's saying is, you know, you've out-bullied me. The bully has out-bullied me. So, you know, it seems that that's what has led him to the progress. At least that's what he's saying, yeah, which Trump is going to love that one.
But maybe Kim Jong-un is smarter. Maybe he's luring Donald Trump into his trap.
Well, I think the my button bigger than yours thing, it was a bit of a charade, it seems now, if they're going to meet without having anything else kind of happen in between. And it seems that, I mean, for Trump, it looked like, you know, he stood up to the bully and has actually come out on the other side smelling of roses. So it is potentially going to be a big win if he can pull it off. But many people have tried before.
Where are they going to meet? Because this fascinates me. You could meet perhaps in the DMZ, the demilitarized zone between North Korea and South Korea, although that would have all sorts of logistical. It has happened before that there have been meetings there. There is no way I can see Kim Jong-un leaving North Korea to go to Beijing or anywhere for a meeting, because I'd imagine he'd be terrified of the possibility of a coup while he was out of the country.
Yeah.
And there's no way Donald Trump is going to go to North Korea.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time a sitting US president has ever met with the leader of North Korea. So, I mean, you would have to think that the Secret Service would be a little bit, kind of cautious about going to the DMZ with Donald Trump.
And definitely not to Pyongyang. And particularly as well, I don't think he'd like the burgers there either.
I think there's something unnerving about the whole thing anyway. You know, it's, even if it is going to end up being something wonderful, it does feel unnerving to even talk about it. You know, Trump also has that thing about Otto Warmbier. Do you remember the student who went out with that,
yes,
with that name and died out there? And he was really, that was one of the cases I saw him to be the most passionate about. So I'm wondering, you know, will that be something as well that, or has that led to, I don't know how he would be about that.
Okay, now it could be that he's trying to use this as a gigantic distraction. Trump, I mean, because there's been all sorts of things that have been happening over the last week, Stormy Daniels more and all that sort of stuff. But there's another thing that I think he'll be going mad about, Larissa, the idea of the Obamas, his predecessor Barack Obama and Michelle Obama, having a Netflix series, because he's so obsessed with ratings, the idea that they might have a giant television audience could kill him.
Yeah, turning his own trick on himself. It's kind of genius in a way what they've done. This would have been beneath the likes of the lovely civilized Obamas, I think, before Trump, but now they're maybe taking a leaf out of his book. So what they're doing is they're in talks to produce a series of programs for Netflix. Apparently they'll be chairing discussions, you know, on issues of importance to them, like healthcare and climate change. But it would be a huge platform for them, a direct line to almost 100 118 million subscribers.
Well, yeah, that's the trouble. But the thing is, you don't know how many people actually watch any individual Netflix programme, which I'm sure Donald Trump would actually end up pointing out as well, suggesting that nobody is actually watching them. But Barack Obama already appeared on David Letterman's programme, The Interview Show, and there's no doubt that when it comes to somebody who's very smooth and classy in front of a TV camera, Barack Obama has it.
He has that quality, yeah. I mean, you know, watching that David Letterman episode, which kind of kicked off his series, it was a big ratings draw from what you're led to believe, although, yeah, Netflix don't release that data, and definitely that's a tweet in waiting from the president. But I think it will be interesting because there's also talk of them producing shows that will highlight inspirational stories, and there's nothing that we love more than the Obamas and an inspirational kind of case or couple or child or story. You have to see in the last week the girl who was staring up at Michelle Obama's portrait. Michelle Obama posted a video of dancing with her on Twitter this week. So they know, they're really savvy. They know how to manipulate the kind of the public kind of airwaves to their advantage.
Are you suggesting a degree of cynicism compared to the way that they operate?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Michelle Obama has famously said, when they go low, we go high. And I think this is their example of them doing that. They're hitting back at Trump. They're creating a platform for themselves without even ever mentioning his name, which is not something that he has the discipline to do on the other reverse.
I miss them though. I miss Michelle Obama and Barack, as we call him in Ireland, Barack Obama. I miss him, and I think he has been really gracious, and he's been just dignified about the whole Trump thing. I think it's brilliant that he doesn't talk about him. He's only giving him extra airtime.
But I think what's great about this is that they're going to be focusing on the issues as well. So much about American politics at the moment, since Trump has taken office, has been about the circus. It's been about Russia. It's been about all of those things. Whereas I think the American people will probably respond well to somebody who's going to actually just focus on issues.
Yeah, and he has warned them as well not to be cocooned in media that reinforces their biases, which is a big problem in America. Well, everywhere, but in particularly there. So that's
okay. Cool. Let's stick with probably celebrity type people. Meghan Markle. I think we're going to be hearing a lot about her over the next few months, given that she's going to get married to Britain's Prince Harry Windsor in a big ceremony in London in May. There's all sorts of talk about the cost of her dress, been something like £400,000 sterling. Can anyone explain to me how a dress can cost that much?
I couldn't be more bored, honestly, than listening to people talk about weddings. It is officially the most boring subject known to man.
But and yet, why is it that that will have the most enormous television audiences, social media commentary? You or I might disdain it, and yet so many people will take a massive interest in it.
I know, it's absolutely. I'm alone. I'm not in the majority there. When you even look at the interest in the royals in Ireland, is kind of fascinating. You know, to have an interest there. But I think two things: people love, you know, they love the royal weddings. They absolutely love that she's a superstar, a celebrity. I don't understand the interest, but absolutely there's a huge amount of it there. So the latest story about her is that she's been baptized. Yeah, she's been baptized into
the Church of England.
So that kind of harks back, doesn't it, to the Reformation times or Henry VIII and the schism in the church? And I think it's funny because it's like the Queen or the royalty are still insistent on you must be this religion.
Well, that's because the Queen of England is the head of the Church of England. Given that he's in line to succession of the throne, he has to be married to somebody who is a believer in the same faith.
Now, it was not actually necessary for her to do this because she attended a Roman Catholic high school, but she was brought up Protestant. So actually, she wasn't necessarily required to convert in order to marry Prince Harry. But she announced at the time of her engagement that she would do it. And I think, you know, a lot of people are saying it's because it's a mark of respect to Queen Elizabeth II as the church, head of the Church of England. So I think, you know, for her, it's probably something she feels she needs to do to kind of fit in or to be respectful, given that she's coming from so far removed from the royal family. I mean, Catherine was kind of associated with the royals and she's from the UK, whereas this,
Meghan is the actress from Suits.
Indeed, and she's coming from Canada and, you know, so maybe she feels like this is something that she needs to do to fit into the family, and we've all done things to fit into families.
Is it true, though, that they brought the water for the baptism over from the River Jordan, or is that just one of these things that's made up?
This is something that the Mail has reported, so, I mean, we all can attribute whatever we want to attribute to that, but, apparently holy water from the River Jordan was poured on her head during her baptism and confirmation during the week.
She got confirmed as well. Then when you get confirmed as an adult, do you actually get given loads of money?
And get to choose a middle name.
Don't mind choosing the middle name. Loads of money is what everyone who gets confirmed wants.
Yeah, I think she has enough of it, don't they? They seem to have plenty of it there. But the other thing is, I presume it doesn't mean much to her. Obviously, religion isn't important to her. I imagine it would be a very different scenario if her religion was a very important part of her identity. That would be a bit of a wrench. But I would say a friend of mine actually did it. She married a Muslim, and she decided that just as a mark of respect to their family, it was important to their family. So she did it for them because religion didn't matter to her. So
I hope they don't recognise that. Though there might be big trouble if they realise who your friend is.
She doesn't live in this country. She doesn't live here.
Okay, listener says, wrong, Matt. Netflix can tell exactly how many watch a particular programme and even tell how many times a person watches the programme. Yes, I agree with that, but they never publish the figures. And that's the point. If they publish one, they have to publish them all. We don't know how many people have watched The Crown or House of Cards or anything like that. So they're not going to say how many people will watch the Obama programme, and that's what Trump would take advantage of. Manterrupting. Porrick and Wexford says, I have two words, Ivan Yates. Another one says, manterrupting is acceptable in cases of womoaning. Okay, you better explain. Qantas in Australia, the airline, has decided an initiative to encourage staff to stop what is called manterrupting, which is what, Ian?
So manterrupting is whereby a man interrupts a woman when she's speaking. So this happens quite regularly, and I imagine women are in a much better position than I am to demonstrate where it has happened before. But you do notice it, particularly, I think, one of the areas that it's most prominent is at work meetings, and particularly in meetings where high stakes are being discussed and things like that. So it's great to see an employer come out and say basically that they are going to be keeping an eye on it, and that
they're gender specific words that they've decided to ban. Give us some of them.
Yeah. So what they are suggesting is that their employees refrain from gender specific words such as honey, love, and guys. While the terms partner, spouse, and parents are preferred to the more exclusionary words such as husband and wife and mum and dad, because those are very kind of explicit,
So this is the thing, like on a flight, making an assumption, would mum and dad like to move the children? No, actually, we're not married. Is that the type
exactly,
of thing?
Exactly, yeah. So, I think it makes sense because, those things can bother people. Look, I know it's not the end of the world and it's not going to be life or death, but those things can bother people. And particularly from an employee perspective, I think, this is predominantly, it seems, between employees, but also as well, obviously, it'll extend to the passengers too.
Larissa, what do you make of this?
No, I think it's patronising to the groups that they're intending to, be nice to. People don't need that level of protection. To suggest that they do is as insulting, that a person would sit there and be that, that you expect the world to revolve around you. The world should change for me. I mean, that's just unfair because unfortunately in the real world, that isn't what happens. And anybody who, comes from any kind of minority group, which actually myself, I do a number of them. And, you realise after a while that the world isn't going to change for you, and for you to think that it is just a massive, you're going to go around the place constantly with a chip on your shoulder feeling hurt, and that's of no progress or use to anybody. But this kind of thing, it's not only that, but also it's oppressive to, if you can say, look, here's our guideline on what we'd like you to do, but to actually say this is what you must do is it's language policing, it's thought policing. And it's actually, I find it very worrying that somebody might possibly lose their job over not wanting to do this.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think for me, what they're saying is that language can make groups of people feel invisible. So for what they're saying is, like, the term chairman, for instance, can reinforce the idea that leaders are always supposed to be men. And I agree with that. I mean, I think the more you start to challenge and move the dial along a bit, I think the more progress we can make. One of the issues, so like one of the things that I experienced, in the last kind of year was that when we were getting married and we went to the venue, they gave us a form, even though we're two guys, they gave us a form that said bride and groom. Like, how much hassle would it have been for them to just change it to groom and groom? Do you know
how
what
did
I mean?
You fit it in?
Well, yeah, exactly. Like that was the contentious point, you know what I mean? So I mean, for me, like, I do see where this can interact and intersect with people's lives, and it just makes sense to kind of be a little bit more thoughtful. I think they're not necessarily trying to police our thoughts, but they're trying to make us to think about people in a more inclusionary way.
Okay, but am I wrong? Often if a man or a woman is here and if they're the chairman of an organisation or the chairwoman, I will say that rather than chairperson.
I think chairperson is a more inclusive term, purely because you're sending out that message there that, you know, it can be either sex. It doesn't have to be. Now, look, the amount of value you put into it, obviously, it's not life or death. But at the same time, I think these things matter in order to be able to push us on and make us, you know, challenge ourselves. Because I think that's the issue. Like, I mean, you're not sitting there, you're not going to challenge and say, you know, actually, it's husband and husband or it's husband.
And you're going to love this. A listener says, your man is talking rubbish, although his wedding story is good.
Thank you.
Larissa, let's move on. And this case in London, noisy neighbours. I love this, particularly in apartments, because there is a banker who has won an extraordinary amount of 100,000 sterling in damages after claiming that noisy neighbours made her life intolerable.
Yeah, it's funny because in Ireland, I don't think it's very hard to deal with noisy neighbours. So it's amazing. It seems to be kind of a different scenario in the UK. Yeah, so she sued her upstairs neighbour. And it wasn't even for like mad parties or you know, constant loud music or anything. It was the intolerable noise of their young family on wooden floors. So it's
children running around on the floors upstairs.
Seems like children running around and the patter of feet, you know, drove her so insane that it was family of five now, in fairness. So I'd say they managed to be like a stampede of antelopes. But in that said, she still managed to, she got €100,000 in damages. Now, he was the banker. So I'm going to just get this. Sorry, she's the banker. Sorry.
She's claiming things like, for example, children playing, dishes been washed, ruined her peace during the day and kept her up at light.
Yeah.
I mean, she didn't have the three children. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I do understand where she's coming from. She wants to live her life without having to be interrupted by it. Whatever about the parents, they were the ones who chose to have that many children. So, I mean, her objection was that she lived there for years and years beforehand. And so the judge kind of acknowledged that and said, look, when the family were about to move in, there was work done to the place, which meant that carpets were torn up. And so, you know, the judge was basically saying that, you know, there should be carpets on those floors because, you know, the noise travels too easily.
Mm. Okay, there's another story here, Larissa, and I think this will be of interest to you because you've spoken on the programme about these issues with us before and written about it. But this is the case in Britain of a company director who has been ordered to register as a sex offender because he made a pass at a friend that went wrong. What exactly did he do which has led him to being registered as a sex offender?
So what happened was he was friends with this woman, with this woman he obviously had a massive crush on that he could barely contain.
Now, he's a 58-year-old man, but anyway.
Clearly, yeah. But still, it doesn't that doesn't stop them. So so he was. It looks like he said to her, "Oh, look at that swarm of wasps on the building," which is a weird chat up line, you know, that I've ever heard. But anyway, when she looked up, then he kind of made this pass at her, you know.
He put his arm around her.
Put her arm around
her. Kissed her on the shoulder and head.
Kissed her on the shoulder, neck, and the back of her head, right? So he kind of, it looks like as if he kind of, she looked up for the wasps, like the whole thing is insane. And then he like stumblingly sort of kissed her all over the head and the neck and all that sort of stuff. Now, what she did was she went in and she said, you know, I'm going to go in and I'm going to press for a charge of sexual assault, which she did. And the reason why, when the police went after it, which is kind of strange in itself, you know, that they would classify it as sexual assault, but they did. That's how it fell in the law. And when they went to court, he immediately said, look, this is what I did, do this, and completely admitted it. So then it was like, okay, instantly you're guilty of sexual assault, and then instantly you go on the sex offenders register. Now the problem with that is that it completely devalues the point of the sex offenders register when you have some old fella making a clumsy pass at a girl. You know, it just devalues the whole thing. And you know, what's the point of having one if people like that
are on it? There's no denying it's certainly, there's a bit of touch of the Basil Fawlty's off this one. But like, I mean, I think ultimately the main point here is that this woman was trying to go about her business without having to be, you know, launched upon by this fella. He did, and therefore, you know, from her perspective, it's non-consensual. And although, yes, there's absolutely like a graduating and escalating seriousness involved, like ultimately he did do something that was wrong.
You've used a very interesting phrase there, saying about him like a Basil Fawlty. For those who've seen Fawlty Towers, I mean, there are lots of people who are socially awkward.
I know, but those people do not have the right then, therefore, to excuse their behaviour just because that's the way
but
that they are.
But they might not realise. You know? And I mean, and there is a difference, isn't there, when you say about an escalation and a grading, because we're not talking about him trying to touch her genitals or anything like that.
Yeah, but her space is still her own personal space, and she deserves to not, you know, expect to be launched upon and kissed in three different places and her his arm put around her and things like that, and her be made feel uncomfortable, you know what I mean? So, I mean, look, if it takes this for him to realise that that's not appropriate, then ultimately that's... I know, look, I'm Mr. PC Brigade today, but, like, genuinely, that's what I think.
Okay, let's finish off by talking a little about the Amazon Echo, because apparently the Echo devices are laughing and has terrified some users because, well, we'll try and find out why. But let's first hear the Alexa laugh. Oh, that sounds like something out of a horror movie.
I think this is brilliant because it's the exact type of thing that, you know, all the conspiracy theorists out there have been saying about Alexa and all of the Google Home and all those different things, is that they all have their own little minds. And I think some Alexa users probably started to believe that this week, because in rare circumstances, apparently, Alexa can mistakenly hear the phrase "Alexa, laugh." And apparently Amazon are going to now change it. So it'll be, you know, she won't laugh now unless you say, "Alexa, can you laugh?" So apparently, though, a lot of people were lying in bed this week and weeks previously, and Alexa just started to unprompted laugh out in the middle of the night, and it's been freaking and spooking people out. I love a couple of the tweets that have been about it. My mother and I were having a conversation, and our Amazon Echo let out the creepiest laugh completely unprompted. I don't know what was so funny, Alexa, but please don't try to kill me in my sleep.
Yeah, can you turn off the lamp or something? Can you turn off the lamp? And then she's suddenly laughing in the middle of the night as you're trying to go to sleep. No. They are weird. They're weird things, though. They do seem to have a personality of their own when you're using them.
Okay, and to finish, listener is giving out to me saying, calling a 58-year-old an old man, I wouldn't do that. That's exactly the age of my co-host on The Tonight Show, Ivan Yates. I wouldn't call him an old man.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.